This is iRadio's group chat. If you're talking about it,
we're talking about it
on iRadio.
The UK government has unveiled plans to introduce anti-misogyny education for boys in schools in England as part of a wider strategy to halve violence against women and girls over the next decade. The proposals include specialist teacher training to spot and challenge misogyny in the classroom, behavioural programmes for high-risk pupils, lessons on consent and healthy relationships, and even a new teen helpline for those experiencing abuse. The move comes amid growing concern about the influence of online misogynistic content on young boys. So tonight we're asking, should Ireland consider something similar? And how early should we start conversations with kids about respect, consent, and for boys, healthy masculinity? I'm joined now by psychologist Lee Chambers, who's also CEO at Male Allies UK, to unpack it all. Lee, thank you for joining me on the show once again. When we talk about misogyny in schools here, what behaviours are we actually seeing among young boys today?
So it's a fascinating conversation, and obviously for our work we do a lot of connecting with boys and finding out what's going on for them. I'm part of organisations that are looking at girls' lived experience, and in many ways there are some behaviours at school that are definitely challenging, that definitely pose a real challenge for girls and women who work in educational establishments. But also there are lots of boys who are actively tackling against these behaviours as well. And their stories don't often get amplified in a world that's generally focusing on the negatives. So we're in a place of real balance. Obviously, a lot of our work specifically focuses on creating a space for boys to explore masculinities, explore misinformation, explore digital literacy and healthy relationships, and does that in a strengths-based way rather than a deficit-based way where we're automatically labelling or blaming them as a problem. We also do use that to create some honest conversations around the harm that they can potentially cause based on their behaviours, understanding that they are socialised in a society that does try and, you know, make them operate a certain way, and that in school systems with other boys there are peer pressures that exist for all teenagers, and there are online influences that are dressed up as positive but sometimes can be quite maladaptive or, you know, present negative behaviours in a positive way for young people. So it's a real balance, to be honest, Valerie, of finding a space to have boys feeling like they're being listened to, that they're not automatically being blamed for some of the things that are happening in society, especially from a kind of misogyny perspective, and actually framing the work that we do with them around healthy relationships, building skills, exploring the whole boy you can be, rather than you need to come and learn about misogyny because you're all doing wrong and because you're all a problem.
I can see where young boys would feel perhaps a little bit targeted and tarnished with that brush, when it is, of course, you know, it's there are many young boys who are tackling the stigma on this on the other side of things and are very vocal about how this wouldn't be something that they would be interested in partaking in. When it comes to particular misogynistic behaviours that we can see, though, when it comes to some young boys, what would they typically present as?
So what we obviously see is what's typically kind of termed as banter. Obviously, some terminologies and attitudes towards girls that are, you would consider, reductive or potentially problematic. Obviously, then, if you look up the kind of the pyramid of those behaviours, there are some behaviours that kind of start to go up towards assault and kind of touching and physical things. And there's also kind of emotional behaviours that partially are down sometimes to relationship aspects around young people and relationships, where there is always, you know, a little bit of consideration for space for learning around how romantic relationships work with young people, because quite often they don't have a lot of experience in that area. Some aspects around consent and still a lack of understanding on what exactly that is. Some young boys think that consent's a single time thing, when actually it's a continuous process. And obviously, with a lot of young people's engagement in sex education nowadays not being through formal training, you know, some attitudes that are coming from things that are consumed online. The other side of it, Valerie, is nudification apps and exploitative imagery. And that is being created in school settings. We've found recently in our research, actually, school is one of the most likely places for that to happen. A third of boys we interviewed actually said that they'd seen that or seen someone they knew be a victim of that. They'd seen it be created or had even created it themselves. So it is something that's actually a lot more prevalent than I think most adults realise, or people in educational settings always know. But educational settings and safeguards in schools are often the place where those things are picked up, which is something to consider if we ban phones from schools entirely, that some of those things might not get picked up because they get picked up in school settings. And then obviously at the very kind of harsh end, there are kind of behaviours that are quite extreme. Obviously, we're almost a year since adolescence, which showed, you know, in many ways, the most extreme of cases that might happen in terms of these behaviours. There's very, very few cases that actually align to that in real life. But there are obviously some stories out there that are particularly challenging. And it's, again, finding that balance, because the harm that's being caused, we need to be honest about that. We're still in a world where the research that Girl Guiding brought out recently showcases that 2/3 of young girls modify their behaviours to stay safe on an everyday basis. That means that the system that they are operating in is, you know, unsafe enough for them to have to change their everyday routines, how they travel, what they wear. And that's young girls modifying their behaviours and, you know, doing that from a very, very young age to try and stay safe. So obviously there are systemic issues. It's not to blame boys for those systemic issues, because they're not even men yet in these systems, but to be honest about helping them to explore what is an increasingly complex and confusing world, try and make it clear, make sure they're listened to and feel safe enough to learn.
The UK government says all of this is about preventing violence against women and girls long term. From a psychological standpoint, though, does early intervention genuinely reduce future violent behaviour? Is there a strong correlation in that?
I mean, the aspects around prevention of this work is important. We've tended as a society to focus on support services for those impacted. And, it, you know, those services are in many ways struggling for funding in the modern landscape as it is. But those support services at point of crisis and point of need to be supported so that they are there for survivors to access and are there to provide the services that people need when these things do happen. The government said they're going to eradicate it. I don't personally think that that's a sensible way of approaching it. It's a significant societal issue that's driven by a lot of different factors. It's not easy to just suddenly switch it off and eradicate it and pretend that it doesn't exist. It definitely does. What we find with prevention is it really comes down to giving people skills to be able to consider both the harm this causes, but also the benefits it brings to them for being able to actually be part of changing those systems that cause harm. Because the truth is, if we look at the impact of violence against women and girls as it's labelled, when there's an impact of that, for example, for young boys whose mothers are victims, and then there's an impact on those boys who then, you know, if you listen to the stories of young boys who have seen and unfortunately been kind of traumatised by the things that have happened to women in their own lives and how that shapes their vision growing up, the truth is, the impact of these things has a significant impact on everyone in society. And the reality is those who perpetrate violence against women and girls are also potentially likely to perpetrate violence against men and boys as well, and even might be potentially violent towards themselves. So, yeah, from my perspective, prevention is not often been used effectively. Sometimes prevention does come in quite a, you know, like a big kind of hammer, we're gonna stop it at source type way, but we really need to target the root causes, but in a way that actually goes down to where people are at and meets them, like I said earlier, with something that broaches this as a skill and a strength for people to grow into, a set of relationship skills that will help them in lots of, you know, ways of navigating the life, an ability to explore their own identity beyond what society expects them to be. Prevention needs to be done in a way that actually brings people on a journey that doesn't, you know, simply tell them that they are going to become a problem, because that's not prevention, that's just growing harm. So it's very much how prevention is done. And I think that we need that balance of support at point of crisis, support that's proactive instead of reactive, and then support that works on prevention and early intervention, but in a way that really thinks about being sustainable in the long term.
how important then is making sure that this is done in the right way? I'm sure a lot of people appreciate and respect the move from the government, but as you've said there, it is all about striking the right balance. Like, for instance, teachers are going to receive specialist training to spot and challenge misogyny. On the other side of it, some students that are identified as high risk might be sent on behavioural courses. Critics are arguing it doesn't go far enough. Some saying it is unfairly painting boys as the problem, you know, possibly alienating people. How do we strike the correct balance here?
Yeah, and I think that is the word, Valerie. We need to strike the balance. Obviously, some of the way things have been labelled, such as let's send boys to misogyny classes, that just feeds fuel to the fire around boys being targeted and victimised and turned into a problem and pathologised. And that in itself isn't helpful. But if it was looking at it, again, from a more strengths-based frame around, you know, relationship skills, I think most people want to build those. In fact, one of the reasons why we found that boys were using AI companions and girlfriends was to try and build relationship skills. This is something that they want to get build and get better at. So if we target that from a positive, you know, developmental skill-based approach, it can actually be really beneficial because boys actually are engaging it, not because they've been identified as a problem, but because they actually want to build some skills that are going to be helpful in their own lives. That's a really, you know, a very different approach that they are entering into that classroom. I mean, I have a lot to say about the strategy. It's good that there is a strategy. The funding is not much. Things do need to be more robust, if I'm honest, when I look at it. And it was announced right before the Christmas break, as everything closed down. I think what's really important to me is that we really look at the whole ecosystem that's working in this area, appreciate that many teachers are at capacity in terms of delivery. There's some really specialist skills to do this work, to work with boys and have that balance between you've been socialised a certain way, the world has implanted a certain set of expectations upon you, and some of those are not fair, but also you do need to start to take some accountability for your behaviours because they can be harmful to other people, and that is something you do have control of. Having that balance is really quite important because you're giving them the safety to explore who they are, but you're also giving them the safety to understand that they can take ownership over how they behave, how they can challenge other peers, how they can, you know, start to grow and explore beyond the very boundary walls of what they've been told they should be. But that work takes time that teachers often don't have, and it also takes some specialist skills. And one of the things that does concern me, Valerie, is that often this is chucked onto a certain group of teachers who are more pastoral and kind of deliver some of these sessions across RHSE, PHSE, or whatever it's called in, you know, each UK territory. But some of those individuals are having to bring these topics when actually they have been subject to misogyny quite significantly in their own lives. It can be quite triggering to deliver these topics. They are, again, delivering to children, some who have been primed by online influencers to challenge if any female teacher ever starts talking about misogyny, patriarchy, masculinity, manosphere. If they're talking about that, they're trying to convert you. They're trying to bring you into the old system. They're trying to brainwash you.
Indoctrinate
and obviously
you.
Yeah, and those students then push back and can make it quite a challenging place to deliver this work. Obviously, we do need to be mindful around what schools offer to young people in terms of exploration rather than preaching. So I'm a fan that there's actively something that's being done. I think there is aspects that really need to consider the capacity of teachers. I do feel specialist skills are helpful. I do feel engaging with specialists is helpful too. I do think it needs to be properly funded, and I think it needs to be really done in a mindful, intentional way that looks to engage boys and is also honest about, you know, the adolescent transition and what that means for both boys and girls in educational settings in the UK and Ireland today.
If it was to be brought in Ireland, would you be supportive of it?
The strategy or bits of the strategy?
The strategy as it's being brought in at the minute, but I suppose as you've just mentioned there, with all the changes that you feel need to be made, would you support the idea of it being brought into schools in Ireland as well?
I think, to be honest, having the conversation is better than nothing. I just think, again, if a strategy is announced, hopefully that's the baseline and it can be built upon. I would look to support it, but I think, again, it's beyond a strategy. It's lovely to have a strategy. How a strategy is actually actioned is what matters. There's been many big announcements by governments that they're doing all these grand things to tackle stuff. My personal opinion is the headline is wonderful, but actually, what are you actually doing on the ground and who's doing the work? That's what actually matters. Is that work sustainable? Are you actually bringing the right people in to do that work? Is it being done in a way that will actually create change in the longer term? And it needs to just be more than votes or reacting to social trends. It actually needs to be deeply thought out, engaging all the people. And if I'm brutally honest, Valerie, there is one thing that's quite often missing from this. They need to go into schools and ask boys and girls what they actually think would work, because they know what actually works for their peers and for them. And that's something that we've been actively doing, which is why we've gone into the schools and actually asked boys, what would you design to do this for other boys and for you? And there's been a few schools where boys have actually designed work for other boys to do in this space. And you know what? It's really engaging, because they fully understand exactly what it's like to be in that world, and they can lead on it. So if we're not co-designing this with young people, then I think we're setting ourselves up to fail before we even started.
They're the perfect audience, and they're the people that should be being surveyed and all this. I would agree. And Lee, I really appreciate you weighing in on this evening. Lee Chambers, psychologist and CEO of Male Allies UK, thank you for joining me on iRadio's group chat.
This is iRadio's group chat. If you're talking about it,
we're talking about it
on iRadio.